Oh, this started such an interesting discussion when I mentioned it on Twitter the other day. This morning, NPR News launches a close-up look at the politics, profits, and culture of marijuana. We begin in California, which started a trend when it approved medical marijuana 14 years ago. Now there's an attempt to blaze another new trail.
This fall, California voters will decide whether to make all pot legal, even for recreational use. The measure would violate federal drug laws. But that hasn't stopped an Oakland businessman from spending millions in an attempt to get the issue passed. Our series, The New Marijuana, begins with this report by NPR's Richard Gonzalez.
The old storefront on the north side of downtown Oakland throbs with a pulse of rock music. And as you get closer, the unmistakable scent of ganja fills the air. Welcome to Oaksterdam, a revitalized neighborhood where medical marijuana is king. Richard Lee hopes the rest of California is paying attention.
Amsterdam is like our model city. When I go there, I see tourists, jobs and taxes being created from the cannabis industry, and I think we could do that here.
Lee owns a medical marijuana dispensary, two coffee shops, a gift shop, and a cannabis nursery. He's created a multi-million dollar empire here, built largely on medicinal pot. And now he wants to take it a step further by turning marijuana into a totally legal, taxable commodity for any Californian 21 or older.
We're basically just trying to say we're like other businesses, you know, we're here to pay taxes, create jobs, and improve the community.
Everybody knows this guy. No matter where you go, everybody knows this guy.
Stephen Tate, a computer security analyst, says Lee has lots of supporters.
It's good to have a champion for a social cause that's really good, you know, and it's not just, you know, a bunch of potheads, you know, taking over. No, it's not. There's legitimate purposes for this. In fact, I wish the liberalization of marijuana laws would have been around when my grandmother was suffering from breast cancer.
Lee has a personal feeling for the power of marijuana. 20 years ago, he was paralyzed in a work-related fall and now zips through the neighborhood in a wheelchair. After he started having muscle spasms, cannabis was his one reliable source of relief. And that's how Richard Lee, raised in a family of Goldwater Republicans, became the force behind the California ballot measure that would make pot legal for fun and profit.
I am kind of a conservative, and I do see marijuana prohibition as eroding respect for the laws and law enforcement. I want good police law enforcement. I want to work with the police. I'm the opposite of, you know, the guy saying F the police.
And when it comes to cops, Lee believes they should spend their time chasing bona fide crooks, not marijuana smokers. He came to that conclusion years ago with a gun pointed at his head. Two thugs robbed him at the drive-up window of a fast food restaurant.
Pretty simple, just fast food drive-thru. Guns put to your head, you know, until you get out of the car. And then what really made me as mad as the carjacking, though, was the police had a really slow response time. So I started thinking about, you know, there was less police out there looking for people like me and more going after the real sociopaths and predators, you know, we'd be better off.
Supporters say Lee is a visionary who put his money where his mouth is. He bankrolled the expensive petition drive that got marijuana on California's November ballot. But others claim Lee has ulterior motives.
I think people are making a mistake if they vote for this. And I think they think they're voting for legalization. They're not. They're voting for restriction of marijuana.
That's Dennis Perrone, known by many as a godfather of the medical marijuana movement. He's against the ballot measure Lee is backing because he says the government would still have too much control over pot and shouldn't be allowed to tax it. Plus, he thinks Lee is mostly interested in legalizing marijuana so he can get even richer selling it.
He's doing this to make money.
So you think he's doing it for the money?
I do. I can't believe it. But I do think it's for the money. All about money and power.
Lee doesn't give a lot of thought to his critics. He's too busy being the Johnny Appleseed of pot.
You don't want seeds in your cannabis.
This is a storefront school where Lee teaches people how to grow marijuana and how to run their own medical marijuana dispensary. He calls it Oaksterdam University, and on any given night, he's the main instructor for a half dozen attentive students.
Generally, you're going to get rid of the male plants that produce pollen that would fertilize the female plants, and that's how you get sensimilla, or seedless cannabis.
10,000 students have matriculated through Oaksterdam U, and Lee is still growing the business with two other schools like this one.
Brilliant.
absolutely brilliant idea.
That's Steve D'Angelo, operator of another medical marijuana dispensary in Oakland. He's a Big Lee supporter, but wonders if California is truly ready to take the next step and legalize cannabis.
I would have preferred to see the initiative wait for another 2 years until we went into a general election cycle when our voters are more likely to turn out.
It could come down to whether voters see marijuana as a cure for California's ailing budget. By some estimates, making pot legal and taxing it could generate $1 billion in new revenues.
I guess it's a sign the time is right for thoughts to change and that society is maturing and looking at this subject in a new way.
But Richard Lee is a pragmatist. He knows changing decades of prohibition won't be easy, so even if he fails this time, he says he'll keep trying. Richard Gonzalez, NPR News, Oakland.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. The economy grew by more than 400,000 jobs last month, according to the Labor Department. But that good news just isn't as good as it sounds. Nearly all of that growth came from temporary jobs for census workers. Private employment, a barometer of the real demand for labor, rose by just 41,000 jobs. NPR's Frank Langfitt has the story.
The American job market is growing again, just not at the speed most people would like. This morning, President Obama looked on the bright side of the May employment report.
We're moving in the right direction. The economic policies that we put in place are working.
Speaking to workers at a truck dealership in Maryland, the president acknowledged that most of the new jobs, 411,000 to be exact, were for the census. Then he emphasized the positive.
Even if you put those temporary jobs aside, there's no doubt that we saw another month of private sector job growth. And that is obviously critical.
Critical? Sure. But also, to many economists,
disappointing. I was expecting a lot more.
Disappointment. I thought that we would see above 100,000 in private sector job growth.
You know, it is a bit discouraging. I mean, there's no magic bullet.
That was Mark Zandi, co-founder of Economy.com, John Graham, a professor of finance at Duke, and Scott Brown, chief economist with Raymond James. Investors shared their gloom. The Dow fell sharply, and by mid-afternoon, it was down more than 300 points. Scott Brown says the problem right now is this. The economy just isn't adding anywhere near enough jobs to absorb the millions of people who are still out of work.
Coming out of a severe recession, we'd really like to see much stronger gains on the order of 250,000 to 300,000 jobs per month.
Even at that pace, Brown says it would take at least 6 years before the unemployment rate could return to the good old days of 5%.
So there's a huge mountain to climb in terms of the labor market. It's really going to take some very strong economic growth for a long period of time before we push that unemployment rate down significantly.
In fact, the unemployment rate did fall in May from 9.9 to 9.7%. But some economists thought it was mostly due to those census jobs. So why is it taking so long for employers to start really hiring again? John Graham of Duke says it comes down to one of the most feared words in economics, uncertainty. Graham, along with CFO Magazine, surveys chief financial officers around the country. Most tell him they're uneasy about what they see.
We have a world economy that is just very uncertain right now between, you know, financial difficulties in Europe and in the United States. It's murky and difficult to tell how much of the growth is coming from long-term authentic growth versus short-term stimuluses and tax credits for buying houses and automobiles.
Our company has seen modest growth, but we're not sure there's a whole lot of reality to that growth.
Darren Holderness is an executive with Wood Grain Millwork. The company is based in Idaho and makes doors, windows, and molding for houses. Sales are up about 11% this year, but hiring isn't.
We've not yet hired full-time company employees.
Holderness says some of the increase in company sales was due to the government tax credit for first-time homebuyers. But that expired at the end of April. Holderness isn't sure what will drive sales next. So instead of going on a hiring spree, he's been cautious.
Our first choice to cover the extra volume is to just use our staff more hours. But it came apparent with the higher levels of volume that we did need to hire some outside people.
But they were temps, not permanent staff. And later this year, Holderness expects he'll have to lay off many of them as well. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
After the president questioned BP spending on its image, the company announced it would pay more money to people who filed claims for loss of income. The move comes after a week of apologies from the company, apologies that some coastal residents say are not enough. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports.
BP's public relations push this week included this television ad featuring CEO Tony Hayward in a coastal setting, seabirds chirping in the background.
To those affected in your families, I'm deeply sorry.
We will make this right, he promises. But in towns on the Gulf Coast, BP has a credibility problem.
Words are cheap. It's time for action.
That's Alabama Republican Joe Bonner, whose congressional district is on the coast. He says nobody has handled the spill properly.
We are dealing with a catastrophe that we weren't prepared for. The company wasn't prepared for it. The government regulators that permitted it were not prepared for it. The administration wasn't prepared for it. It's frustrating beyond words to see people pointing fingers and wasting time about, you know, this, that, or the other thing, while the monster keeps growing.
The monster being just a few hundred feet from where he sits, at Gulf State Park, overlooking a wide expanse of sparkling white sand and blue-green surf. Even as kids ride waves on their boogie boards, oil paddies are washing up less than a half mile away, and there's a lighter fluid-like odor in the air. Lifeguard Richard Roberts points to patches just beyond the waterline.
It's about the size of a baseball. It's a blackish-reddish color. We actually have three now at the state park.
This oil isn't the only mess BP is trying to clean up. Early on, CEO Hayward made comments that didn't sit well with coastal residents.
Well, it wasn't our accident, but we are absolutely responsible for the oil, for cleaning it up.
That was May 3rd on NBC's Today Show. 4 weeks later on the same program, there was this attempt at an apology.
We're sorry, actually. We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused to their lives. And, you know, there's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
He later apologized for that remark, and this week promised to stay until the cleanup is complete.
Because our commitment is to work with the communities and societies of the Gulf Coast to give them back their livelihoods and their way of life as fast as we can.
In Orange Beach, Alabama, boat captain David Walter has lost his patience. He builds artificial fishing reefs and hasn't been able to work since the oil started leaking. BP gave him $5,000, but he says that didn't even cover a week's expenses.
At first, I was like, accidents happen. You know, BP's going to do what's right. And I defended them. And don't worry, they're going to make us whole. Didn't happen. Not happen.
In Florida, Escambia County Commission Chair Grover Robinson has also lost confidence in BP after being blindsided by reports that oil was nearing the Pensacola shoreline.
No one from Unified Command called us to tell us this, and we found that out through actually a captain that had sent it to a private citizen. We got an email, a text message. We trusted that somebody would tell us before that came up.
Yesterday, the oil reached Pensacola Beach. Four Gulf Coast states are now feeling the effects of the spill. As if to counter BP's public relations push this week, Gulf Shores, Alabama musician Brent Burns created a song from the locals to BP.
I'm sorry's not enough. You gotta mop it up. Stop tap dancing all around the truth. You tried to save a buck. Now we got all this muck. Keep cleaning till it looks brand new.
Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Orange Beach, Alabama.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. The U.S. economy has been growing for months, but many of the nation's unemployed won't feel that growth until they find work. Christina Romer is the White House chief economist.
I'm going to define a full recovery as the way the president does. Does everybody who wants a job have a job?
Based on yesterday's Labor Department report, that day still remains many years away. The government says the economy grew by more than 400,000 jobs in May, but nearly all of them were temporary ones for census workers. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports.
Millions of Americans remain unemployed, but the economy created just 41,000 private sector jobs last month. Investors responded by sending the Dow plunging more than 300 points. The White House's Christina Romer tried to put the best face on the disappointing job numbers.
The important thing is, of course, the longer run trajectory. What we're certainly focusing on is the fact that we've added private sector jobs for each of the last 5 months. If you actually go back, those add up to some 500,000 jobs since last December. So that's the big picture.
That is the big picture, but it's not enough. The recession destroyed more than 7 million jobs. Economists say replacing them and adding enough to account for population growth will take years. Mark Zandi is the co-founder of Economy.com.
We can't conclude that the economic coast is clear until we're creating enough jobs to bring unemployment down in a consistent and substantive way. And for that to occur, we need at least 150,000 to 200,000 jobs per month.
The unemployment rate did fall to 9.7% in May. But to bring it down a lot more, companies will have to become more confident in the recovery and start hiring in droves. So far, that just isn't happening. John Graham is a professor of finance at Duke. He surveys chief financial officers with CFO magazine.
CFOs are saying right now that they would like to hire more because the demand for their product, in some sectors at least, is improving. But they're holding back until they realize this is long-term growth and not just kind of a little spurt of growth that might peter out in the second half of the year.
Our business has picked up tremendously in the last couple of months.
That's Jim Toohey. He's the chief financial officer at Direct Group. It's a big direct marketing firm based in New Jersey.
We're actually about 120% over where we were running early in 2009, 2008.
So in terms of demand, you've more than recovered from the recession?
We have.
But his payroll hasn't. Before the recession, the company employed 1,200 people. Now, his staff is about half that. And Toohey is cautious about bringing on full-time workers.
We're adding workers primarily through temp agencies.
That's because Toohey doesn't want to make a long-term commitment to new employees. He's not sure where the economy is headed, and he doesn't want to lay people off again.
I think that the uncertainties are many. You know, globally, there's just a lot of instability as far as economies, the whole euro issue with Greece and Spain and Portugal. So I think there's just trepidation that something could happen that we may not even have control over.
Toohey is hopeful demand will continue. And if so, he could hire several hundred workers this summer. But, he says, they'll all be temps. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.